The other man splashed into the water right behind, and the two began their short swim to the tropical island only 100 feet away. Hidden in the cool shadows of the pines and palm trees, big men armed with flintlock blasters stood abruptly at the sight of the two swimmers and rushed to meet the sentries on the smooth sands of the golden beach. Helping the swimmers onto land, the guards escorted them through the woods and into a large clearing. A dozen more men sat around a pool of spring water, sharpening weapons, smoking green cigs, or whittling on bits of wood. A bound man was hanging upside down from a tree branch, while two pirates took turns punching the moaning captive. Another slave knelt by a campfire, feeding it twigs in a steady procession so that the fire remained even and didn't burn the seafood stew in the bubbling cook pot. His hands trembled with hunger, but he didn't eat until offered the dregs in the pot by his masters.
Captain Draco, a ship! A ship, sir!
Situated under a piece of canvas stretched between some trees in the manner of a crude tent, lay a large man with his boots removed. A nearly empty bottle of shine rested on the grass nearby, and a sword protruded from the ground within easy reach.
A right fat one!
Slowly opening his eyes, the captain sleepily raised his head. He was tall and heavily muscled, his rugged face a network of scars, a dead-white, marbled eye staring blindly at the world. His clothes were badly stained with sweat, but were without patches. A huge revolver, not a flintlock, was tucked into a gun belt draped across his chest so that the holster rode directly before his heart.
You two again? This better not be another trawler. We already have enough dried fish to last a month.
No, sir. Large ship. No escorts. Looks to be the Constellation.
A cold harbor ship?
Quickly, the captain sat up and pulled on his boots.
Aye, sir. Fore and aft rigging, yellow stripe, 10 cannon side. Gotta be her, skipper. And she's damaged. Running heavy in the water.
Sinking?
Lieutenant Giles strode closer. The big man carried a rusty iron fire axe in his right hand as if it belonged there, the greenwood handle wrapped with strips of leather for a sure grip. Matching flintlocks rode in a wide belt. His face was heavily pockmarked by old acne scars, and long, greasy hair twisted into a thick ponytail dangled down his back.
No, sir. Must be cargo.
Heading north or south?
South, sir.
Enough powder to last a lifetime.
Giles greedily twirled the axe by its handle. The wide blade was rusty and deeply nicked, but the dire weapon still moved as if it were a living part of the man.
Powder enough to buy us another ship. Good work, lads. Stay here and watch the camp. You've earned a rest. Lieutenant, call the crew.
Aye, aye, skipper. Heads up, scum. We've got a rich ship to raid before the sun sets.
Fresh clothes.
Ammo.
More slaves.
To the Delta Blue.
Shouting in unison, the motley crew of pirates swarmed through the trees and onto the beach of a small lagoon. A rumbling waterfall fed the small expanse, mixing fresh water with salt, a deadly combination to everything aquatic except for a few plants and the all-pervasive crabs. The shoreline was hard-packed clay, and floating into the swirling waters was a long, sleek ship, 3 masts rising from her sloped hull, and a double row of cannons bristling along her patchwork hull. With every battle came repairs, unpainted green wood mixing with seasoned timbers taken from the very enemy vessel that caused the damage. The beaten and battered pirate ship looked as if it were about to fall apart and sink at any minute. But the Delta Blue was the second deadliest ship in the entire pirate armada. Only the Langolier was faster and carried more cannon. Even the Lord Baron's men went out of their way to avoid her oversized 30-pound cannons. Captain Draco walked among the men streaming up the gangplank that led to his vessel. A grandfather had rescued the clipper ship from a pre-dark museum and had lovingly rebuilt it by hand, using tools found in another section of the museum. It had taken him and a host of others almost a year to complete the job, and nearly another to knock down the wall and drag the vessel the 6 miles to the ocean. but it gave him a way off the stinking island and into the freedom of the ocean, only to discover that he was trapped in the archipelago chain, the currents and the sea muties refusing anybody exodus to the North American continent. One jungle prison exchanged for another. It drove the man insane, and he slit his own throat. His wife soon took command, then her sons, and the Draco family lived on. Within minutes, the anchor was lifted on a rattling chain, and the first sail rose into the rigging. The sleek vessel caught the gentle breeze and started to ease out of the lagoon and into the salty sea, going faster and faster as the second sail was raised, and finally the mainsail, billowing as it shoved the vessel onward with remarkable speed. Back on the shore, the soaked sentries lay in the warm sunlight to dry and to bask in their good fortune of being on watch when the treasure ship had sailed by their atoll. Soon, the talk of the tired men became peppered with yawns, and gradually they drifted into a light sleep. A slow hour passed, then two, and finally the slave sitting by the campfire dared to move. Rising from his kneeling position, he quietly went to a nearby tree. Pushing away some sand, he uncovered a flat piece of shale. Lifting it carefully, he exposed a shallow hole filled with a canvas bag. Untying the stiff twine that held the bag closed, pulled out a double-barreled flintlock, plus a screw-top jar of shot and powder. Tears started to run down his face as he loaded the ungainly blaster and slid the two pieces of used flint into the receivers. It had taken him weeks to sharpen the worn rocks by rubbing them with a broken piece of granite stolen from the bilge of the pirate ship, but it had been worth the effort. The flint was perfectly shaped, twin stone daggers. Standing erect for the first time in months, he painfully limped over to a pit in the ground. The smell was horrible, stomach-twisting, but he refused to retch and wake the sleeping men. There was only one way off this island, and he would never have another chance.
Honey!
From within the reeking depths of the sewage pit, a mutilated thing turned its ruined face to the open sky.
Kill me!
The masters didn't tolerate escape attempts, and there were many punishments hellishly worse than simple rape and torture. The tears started anew as he lowered the blaster and cocked back the first hammer.
With all of my love, wife.
What the fuck was that?
Over there!
The slave quickly turned the blaster around, cocked the second hammer, and placed the hot barrel into his mouth. It tasted bitter and metallic, and he thought briefly of the first day he saw his beloved wife.
Ah, damn!
Oh, how the fuck are we gonna explain this to Draco, Dad? That captain's gonna lash us for days over letting two slaves escape. With a blaster yet.
Aye. Giles will do us personally. Well, only one explanation I can think of that might work, lad. A slim chance, but all there is.
Yeah? What's that?
That I was patrolling the island when you fell asleep and let the slave steal a blaster.
What? Gonna blame it on me?
No choice.
The older man slashed out with his knife. Gushing blood, the teenager reeled backward, his head almost completely severed from his body. Clutching at his neck, the dying youth stumbled about, then slipped and fell, tumbling into the spring, the red spreading out until tinting the entire pool.
Sorry, my son, but it was you or me.
Mr. Daniels, steady as she goes.
I say steady on course.
Follow this heading for another 50 miles, then go 10 degrees due east.
50 miles, sir?
We're heading for the river. Only way we're going to get our Connie back home.
Aye, skipper. 50 it be.
Giving the man a casual salute, Jones walked past the mainsail and tugged on the ropes to make sure they were properly secured. Then he went to the cargo hatch to check that the lid was bolted tight. It was a four-deck drop from the main deck into the hold where they stored cargo, and he didn't want some damn fool peeking in for a look and getting chilled. Satisfied for the moment, Jones went past the winches to the ragged hole in the ship's deck. Dressed in loose clothing, Abigail was directing the women to nail down strips of old tarpaulin across the opening, sealing it closed. The work was progressing nicely, so Jones saw no reason to interfere. Some skippers wanted to watch over everything like a chicken on an egg, which Jones thought was triple stoop. Train sailors to only do as they were told, and in a real emergency they'd pause before acting and maybe sink the ship. Slaves and bootlickers should have no part in a crew. It took brains and balls to sail the seas. Going to the farthest point away from their work, he looked down at the lower level of the ship. Smashed debris covered the gun deck, busted slats and bits of canvas everywhere. Working with brooms and shovels, Ryan and his friends were busy clearing away the trash, tossing the odd body part out the gun hatches and into the sea. Even their healer was helping.
Ahoy, gun deck! What's your status?
Hefting a shovelful of miscellaneous wreckage, Ryan glanced directly upward at the man.
Yeah. Bad. Best come down and see.
That's the last thing I wanted to hear.
Well, it's the only thing I can say.
Yeah.
Going to the nearest hatchway, the captain followed the companionway to the gun deck, nearly breaking his neck when he tripped on a missing step. Working his trapped boot loose, he stomped through an open hatchway in sour humor. Twisted remains of iron hinges in the jam still supported broken bits of planks. It had to have been a hell of a blast.
What's the problem? The cannons look fine.
Made of cast iron. Of course they're undamaged. Need thermite to harm these blasters. And we got plenty of cannonballs and rope for fuse.
Most of the powder barrels were crushed by the concussion. We're lucky they didn't detonate and blow the ship to kindling.
The captain felt a surge of helplessness and forced it under control. Without her cannon for protection, an attacker would simply sail in close and fire a broadside that would tear them apart.
No luck involved. Black Harry never kept the barrels near each other for just that reason. Okay, how much we got left?
Roughly 200 pounds. Maybe a little less.
200? Shit, fireman. That's not enough to load every cannon once. Can we salvage any of this?
Not mixed with all this sawdust, sea salt, blood, brains, and other crap. Be easier to make new.
If only we could.
Well,
fucking black powder.
Fucking Lord Baron is more like it. That fat son of a bitch guards the secret like his own balls. I once heard some asshole tried to sneak onto Maturo Island to steal the formula. The Lord Baron tortured him to death over a full year. A year!
Diabolical.
Advertising. He did it as a warning to others.
Aye, that it was. Good one, too. But a soul has tried since.
And what if somebody discovered the formula and started making their own?
Make your own black powder. Not worth the risk. Lord Baron catch you, it'd be the arena.
Gladiatorial fare, I imagine.
Aye.
Not afraid of death.
You should be.
Christy felt her hair tighten protectively.
Caelan, don't you think folks have tried? Years ago, some of the pirates and a few vills combined to send a fleet to Maturo Island. Fuckers didn't even reach dry land before getting chilled. The Lord Bastard has got steel boats called Petys that don't need wind and move faster than eels. And fancy rapid fires like yours, only much bigger. Plus those triple-damn firebirds.
Describe them.
They're like arrows, only with flame coming out of their asses. And when they hit something hard, she blows like a keg of powder.
Law rockets?
Maybe. But more likely a black powder rocket with some sort of payload. A grin, maybe.
Those would strike like thunderbolts from Zeus against men with muskets.
A great sense of weariness filled Mildred's soul. In the Deathlands, starving men fought over a can of beans. Here in the Pacific, food was plentiful, and still they fought. It was madness beyond her understanding.
Tell me about those steel boats.
Ryan drew his knife and scratched a crude outline of a battleship in the dark wood.
Anything like this?
Sort of. Only not so many cannons. And they got chimneys and aft, always smoking. Only good point about the PDs is that you can see them coming for miles, but with all the black ash and smoke, and that friggin' loud whistle.
Damn.
PDs. Steam-powered PT boats. The killers of the First Great War. Would have been better if the Lord Baron had a working battleship. At least they could dodge out of the way of one of those behemoths. But not the smaller, faster patrol transport boats. Long ago, in a well-stocked redoubt, Ryan had watched a pre-dark vid of a tiny PT sinking an aircraft carrier 100 times its size. The Constellation would never have a chance against one of those sleek war machines, no matter how bad shape it was in. There went any chance of the companions trying to steal fuel from the crafts. Best to avoid those PTs completely.
Why not leave the islands?
Currents fight you. Can't get more than 100 miles past the last island before you got to turn back. Besides, there'd be muties in the deeps that could swallow a whole ship, masts and all.
Balderdash. Every sailor throughout recorded history told tales of behemoths from the sea that ate ships. None of the stories were true.
What about that spider, Doc?
Well, lad...
Captain!
Everybody looked upward to see O'Malley's anxious face staring down at them from the partially covered hole in the deck.
Report!
There's a ship on the horizon coming our way.
In these waters? What's heading?
East, southeast.
Nuke me. Everybody topside!
Grabbing their blasters, the companions rushed to the main deck, following the captain. Most of the crew was lining the starboard railing, squinting into the horizon.
Due west! Three-masted schooner!
Going to the gunwale, Jones placed a varnished bamboo tube to his eye, pulling a smaller length of tube from out of the big one. J.B. stood alongside the man and pulled out his brass navy telescope. The designs were almost identical.
Nah, can't focus.
Got her. Big ship. Lots of cannon. The gun hatches are open. They're ready to fire.
Any flag flying?
None. Name on the bow is Delta Blue.
Pirates. Stinking cold hearts.
Can we outrun them?
Run? Impossible. We're bigger and fully laden. They have 3 sails to our 1. They'll reach pistol range in short order, and then they'll board and storm us.
Aren't they going to use their cannons?
Don't want to sink us, lad. They want the ship, its cargo. And us in chains. Cannons be the thing they use if we try to escape. Go faster! Dump cargo! That'll take hours. They'll reach us in only minutes.
Abigail put a hand on Jones's shoulder, and he covered her hand with his.
I'll scuttle the Connie and take us all to go see Davy before I ever go back in chains.
Give me liberty or give me death.
Suddenly, the pirate vessel veered to the south to bring it broadside to the Constellation, and a line of flashes dotted its side.
Down!
Everybody went prone.
That was a warning shot. The shitters think we'll try to bargain or plead our way out. Okay, Outlanders. Time to find out if you're any good.
Without a word, Ryan slid the Steyr rifle off his shoulder. Working the bolt, he focused the cross of the scope on the other ship and swept the deck, looking for targets. Through the hatches, he saw gunners busy with the cannons. On deck, sailors raced about with nets and leg irons. Standing on the quarterdeck was a man with a gun belt draped over his chest like a bandolier. Behind the wheel was a big, ugly man, an axe tucked into his belt. Either could be the captain.